Hello, Western Wisconsin. Let's see what we're up to. And we're going to do that within the confines, friendly confines, of the next 53 and a half minutes on Spectrum West. It's nice to not see you. Good to know you're there, though, in the audience for the arts, music, and West Wisconsin culture stage that is Spectrum West. Today, it's kind of a combination, young up-and-coming band called Softly Dear. They're on the road right now, but we caught them at Phoenix Park in Eau Claire before they headed out. Jim Oliver talks Shakespeare and Hamlet with Lemoyne McLaughlin, or however you pronounce it. The old Rittenhouse Inn in Bayfield is a bed and breakfast icon, one of Wisconsin's originals. Today we'll meet Mark Phillips, second-generation innkeeper. And our first conversation today is about wine in Wisconsin. The grape-growing and wine-making phenomenon continues strategically around the Badger State, and Western Wisconsin has its share of vineyards and sommeliers in its midst, a couple of whom were recognized with Best of Division awards at this year's Wisconsin State Fair. Danziger Vineyards in Alma won for Best Non-Grape Wine, and Riverbend Vineyard of Chippewa Falls was said to have the best blush rosé of those entered. Donna Sachs is winemaker and an owner of Riverbend. She was on a sales trip when we contacted her. She was nice enough to pull over for a chat. I commented on how impressive it is that Wisconsin has so many new and wonderful vineyards, given the fact it's still a fairly new trend.
It is, and you know, there are some wineries in the state like Wollersheim near Madison who have been in business for 40-some years. Mm-hmm. The grape varieties that they grow there have been around for a while. But if you get as far north as we are in Chippewa Falls, the varieties they grow in the southern part of the state are not zoned for the northern part of the state. So what we grow at Riverbend are University of Minnesota hybrids, which have only been around for maybe 15 years. The grape varieties are newer hybrids, but because they exist, that's why you're starting to see so many new wineries coming, because we can actually grow grapes around here.
Does the fact that those varieties were bred at U of M mean that there are a lot of wineries in Minnesota as well?
There are. I think, actually, though, Minnesota is lagging behind Wisconsin a little bit. There's been kind of explosive growth in Wisconsin.
Well, with apologies to anybody in Minnesota listening, I mean, hasn't Minnesota lagged behind Wisconsin for years? In most everything? I mean, come on, let's... We try to be honest on this show. Was there a gentleman, I mean, one person who is credited with breeding a variety, a hardy grapevine?
You know, it started off with one gentleman. His name was Elmer Swenson, actually from Wisconsin.
Ah.
Of course, right?
That's not surprising to me.
No, and he has since passed away, but he was kind of the pioneer. And then he worked with the University of Minnesota on some of the early varieties. And the program is now part of the fruit breeding department. And there is a gentleman there, a scientist that is in charge of the grape breeding specifically. Within the same department is the apple program, which created the Honeycrisp apple that everybody's familiar with. They do a lot of fruit breeding. They breed plum trees. They do the huge apple program.
So, yes, honestly, we do have Minnesota to thank for some things. We'll give them
we really do.
A bit about the history of River Bend, Donna, and your personal history with wine and winemaking.
My husband and I moved from Minnesota to Wisconsin in 2006.
Were you born in Minnesota?
We were born in Minnesota.
Then I have to apologize for those barbs there. I'm sorry.
That's quite all right.
Okay, good.
So we came over to Chippewa Falls in 2006 with the intention of starting the vineyard. So we started planting that year. We now have 4,600 vines in the ground, about 8 acres worth. Mm. And then partnered with another local couple to start the winery and the tasting room and opened in 2009.
And so you're sitting in Minnesota saying, let's start a vineyard. You liked wine and you thought, gee, this is what we should be doing.
We did. We're wine drinkers, and we were also amateur winemakers, and we've been doing that for several years. What actually happened, I used to be a computer programmer, and I worked for a large corporation in the Twin Cities that went through bankruptcy, so we decided that when I lost my job, that's when we would move. I actually lasted for 2 years at the job that we knew I would lose, and so we bought the property near Chippewa Falls and then just sat on it for a couple of years, and when I got laid off, that's when we moved.
Good planning. Way to go.
Yeah, and it worked out. It worked out quite well. You know, it's a job I probably wouldn't have left on my own.
Sure.
But when that option is not given to you, we decided that was the time to maybe make a change, and we're we're thrilled we haven't looked back since.
On the phone with us, Donna Sachs. She's on the road right now. She's owner and winemaker at River Bend Vineyard and Winery. That's near Chippewa Falls. Of course, the Napa Valley and European vineyards are the icons, but as we mentioned a bit earlier, the competition is becoming keen in Wisconsin. Is the Midwest a winemaking territory now? We haven't brought up Iowa or Illinois or Michigan. Are vineyards sprouting up all over?
There's an amazing number of vineyards. The Michigan industry has been in place for 30, 40 years as well. They can grow a lot of traditional wine grapes. They can grow some of the same varieties that you grow in California because they have lake effect weather.
Sure.
But you don't ever see non-traditional wine in stores. So, like, you'll never see a Michigan wine in Wisconsin. You'll never see a Wisconsin wine in Michigan. We have customers who wish that we were in stores in Minnesota, but you won't see a Wisconsin wine in Minnesota.
Huh.
You see California and maybe Washington and Oregon. But all of these other regions, even though they've had wineries in them for 30 or 40 years, to break into the market. We're fortunate. We're in a lot of stores in Wisconsin, but I don't think we'll ever be outside of Wisconsin, which is okay. We don't plan to get that large anyway, but it's very competitive. What we kind of hang our hat on is the localness of it.
Sure.
You know, we sell an experience to people when they come to our tasting room that's just more than picking up a bottle of wine.
We've had kind of wild weather the last year or so. Has that affected what you do?
It has, actually. This past winter was the toughest winter we've seen in the vineyard, for sure. We had a lot of plants that produced last year that died back to the ground this year, which means they won't produce fruit this year because the fruit sets on last year's wood. So production will be down in Minnesota, Iowa, Missouri, and all points east. It was tough, you know, in the eastern half of the United States in general.
I bet.
But the good news is last year was great. We had a huge harvest last year, and because we work with a product that tends to age well, we actually have some wine that we made last year in excess of what we knew our needs would be because we took everything our growers had, and that will actually help us get through a year when production will be down. You know, if we have an up year and a down year, you know, everything is evens out. If we have several winters in a row that were like last winter, that will be a different story. Then there's going to be problems.
Okay. I have my fingers crossed that it won't happen to you more than one winter in a row. That's owner, winemaker, Donna Sachs from Riverbend Vineyard and Winery, although she's on a Goodwill tour right now. We're talking to her from her motorhome, I guess.
Yep.
You know, Donna, running a winery is more than just producing wine. I mean, you have to be a concierge, you have to be a hostess, and you're the proprietor of almost a mini theme park, aren't you?
You know, there's a whole lot going on, which keeps it very interesting. It's seasonal, so in the summer we're farming, and then in the fall we're making wine.
Mm-hmm.
Year round, we're doing the hospitality side of things. So we're fortunate we have a good staff around us that takes care of people very well. Services is huge. You know, you can have the greatest product in the world, but if somebody comes to your business and they don't get good service, you're not going to sell much of your product. So there's a lot to it, but it keeps it exciting. No one ever gets bored around there, that's for sure.
Good for you. This weekend, I read you have a celebration with Bubbles.
We do. What's kind of cool is we are the only winery in Wisconsin that produces champagne method sparkling wine. So we are making sparkling wine the same way the French make champagne. Oh. And we use only grapes that come from Wisconsin, which are very suited to champagne production. And so we have three wines coming out this weekend, two of which are brand new, and we're pretty excited about that. Bubbly is just a fun thing.
Oh, yeah. You got to tickle your nose once in a while.
That's right. Sparkling wine's just fascinating.
Mm-hmm. It is. You can just sit and look at it and watch the bubbles.
That's right.
It's a good way to pass the time. Later this autumn, it's the onset of cranberry blush, I read, too.
That is true. Right before Thanksgiving, we release cranberry blush, the fall seasonal wine that we do that people look forward to. Pairs really well with Thanksgiving dinner, generally sell out by the end of the year, and it's just something that people, they've gotten used to seeing it come out in November.
Hey, Donna, thanks for being with us here on Spectrum West. It's been fun. We kind of enjoy having you in our region. You make life more interesting. Good luck on your trip, and again, congratulations on the state fair recognition. Hopefully people will get to know River Bend and their products much better as time goes on. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
River Bend Vineyard and Winery is online at riverbendvineyard.com. This is Spectrum West. Coming up, we'll imagine being in Bayfield at the old Rittenhouse Inn.
Support for WPR comes from Ken Vance Hyundai, featuring the 2014 Elantra with a 6-speed automatic transmission and a 1.8-liter 4-cylinder engine designed for 38 miles per gallon. More at kenvance.com.
The title is The Old Rittenhouse Inn Cookbook, Meals and Memories from the Historic Bayfield B&B. And I would wager the farm that most of you listening out there have heard about the Rittenhouse in Bayfield, Wisconsin, and many of that most have spent a night or two on the interior side of the threshold and the welcome mat. So when I heard about the recently released cookbook and knew there was history behind the recipes, the cook, the family, the structures, and more, I recognized it would make for captivating conversation. Mark Phillips, second-generation innkeeper, said, "Sure, let's talk." And the rest is coming at you right now. Before anything else, I'll point out my review doesn't hold much status, but this was one enjoyable literary experience with which to spend some quality time. The last engagement I had with it was a final review yesterday, lying on my back as the rain fell outside my second-story window, and I thought that was a perfect environment for soaking up what you've put together. Recipes are the focal point. There are a lot of them, but they're only the beginning. It says cookbook on the cover, but it should also read scrapbook, memoir, chronicle, family history, and nice piece of nonfiction. And we should point out that the old Rittenhouse cookbook is as fresh as the ingredients being suggested. It mentions and illustrates, by the way, the 2014 ice caves phenomenon, so that's how new it is.
Thank you. Yeah, and it was neat that we were able to get the ice caves in there because it, like you say, it was such a recent and fresh event and really kind of transformative in some ways, I think, for our little area to see that you could have so many visitors in a time that normally it's very quiet and all coming for a wonderful natural thing like the ice caves. I thought it was just so cool. You couldn't buy a Snickers bar for a 40-mile radius.
Now, the old Rittenhouse Inn, you are open year-round, yes?
We are, yes. We always have been. Something we've worked on for many years. We've created special events like beer and wine tasting weekends, dinner concerts, holiday dinner concerts, and things like that to kind of entice people to come up here during those times that are really beautiful times to visit Bayfield, but you know, people just don't travel as much in the winter.
There was a previous cookbook Mark produced with love, as all things at the old Rittenhouse Inn have been, by your mother, Mary. When and how did you determine there was room for more Rittenhouse prose?
I think, you know, this was something that my wife, Wendy, and I have really kind of been dreaming on for about 9 or 10 years, really, since we kind of came back here. The cookbook had been out of print already for a number of years, the first one. A lot of people told us, you know, we still have that. We cook with it all the time, but when is that next one coming out? And so many times people would ask us if we had a cookbook to sell. The stars aligned, I think, when our chef, current chef, Matt Chingo, came aboard, and he was really instrumental in just the initial getting all the recipes together and tested and all of that. Once we had that in place, then we knew we really had something. But we wanted to also add, as you said, some stories and history and a little talking about Bayfield and the area.
Did Mom's original cookbook have some of that, or was it just all recipes?
Well, her first cookbook had about, 10 or 15 pages up front of a little prose, some history and background on them, and kind of talking about the local, regional cuisine that was always the focus here. But then once it got to the recipes, it was all recipes. There was no pictures at all. So we were really able to take advantage of today's printing advances to make a much more colorful and vibrant kind of book with a lot more pictures this time.
That's the voice of Mark Phillips, proud to be called an innkeeper at the old Rittenhouse Inn in Bayfield. He has just released the old Rittenhouse cookbook, and what a book it is. From the time you said, all right, we're going forward with this until it just came out, which is just recently, how long did that take you?
The real work, I think, had taken us about a year and a couple months. I think it was just about in June of last year that Matt first turned in what he thought would be a good selection of recipes. And then, of course, we had a bunch of other ones that we wanted to do, and we all also take a few from the old book. The initial idea was to do a revised and expanded version of the old book, but we quickly realized that cooking has changed, you know, in 20 years, and how we do it here has changed too. People are eating differently, lighter and healthier, and all that is reflected, I think, too, in the book.
This was right up your alley, too, because your degree is in writing.
It is, yes. I went to the UW-Madison, got a degree in English with an emphasis in creative writing.
You can tell reading the book.
Thank you.
Your mom, Mark, was famous for saying, after we turn the corner, when talking about doing things at the right times. Have you turned the corner? Everybody turned the corner with the old Rittenhouse Inn now, or are there still corners you're looking at?
Oh, I think a great question. And I think, you know, as you get older, you realize there's always more corners.
Yeah, I mean, where would we be without corners?
It's true. And there's always more dreams to fulfill. And we have at least three major projects looking down the road, and then a list of not quite as major. And by the time you get all the projects together, we have got probably 70 or 80 of them. So that'll keep us busy for a long time.
I don't think anybody wants a completely straight road ahead of them.
No.
As an only child, you knew it would or could be yours someday. As you grew up, did you feel the pressure? Did you know that was going to happen? They did so many things right and actually helped write the B&B book in Wisconsin.
Yes, my parents really, really kind of did in many ways. My dad always said to me growing up, I'm not a Mason. I don't do what my dad did. You don't have to do what your dad did either.
Mm-hmm.
And he always made that really clear. And I've always been really in love with music, and he's really letting me go with that, always. But in the back of my head, I did know that I'd be back, because I am an only child, and there's a huge connection to this place for me. So it was really just a matter of time.
Do you remember the day when you said, yeah, I'm going to do it?
I do. I remember Wendy and I had some very intense talks about it. At the time, we were living in Drummond, about 40 miles away, and kind of driving back and forth a few times a week and realizing that that wasn't going to work. And, you know, we'd have to move up in this area full time. And just that big decision, I can exactly see where I was when it was made.
Mark Phillips with us of the old Rittenhouse Inn Phillips family. From a distance, Mark, it appears as if it's all a storybook tale, but you did have bumps in your road. Your story about your mom's stroke was especially riveting, you and Madison and all. Can you just give us a little bit about that, how that may have changed you?
You know, it's kind of like before the stroke and after the stroke, the history of the Rittenhouse, and certainly had a huge effect here on our business. We hired 8 people, I think, initially to try to cover all of my mom's positions when it happened. And I was in school, so it was very difficult to be distant from that happening and going on. I wanted to drop out and come home and help, but Dad kind of said, you know, stay the course and we'll get through this together. And that's what we did. And, you know, in hindsight, I'm really glad that I did. But it was, you know, definitely the hardest thing that's ever happened to all of us. But fortunately, she lived and is still with us today. And we had such fun at the launch party signing those books together, because she never got to have her party. She was working on her book when the stroke happened. It was finished after that by Dad and the staff.
Mm-hmm.
So it was so fun to just sit there and laugh and sign books together that day. It was a special moment.
Wonderful stuff. And she still is the matriarch. I mean, she still has input into the running of the house. But I'm sure both your dad and your mom have done a great job of delegating. It's your Rittenhouse Inn now.
Yes, and I think Wendy and I were so fortunate to have them here with us, you know, really over the past 9 years. It's been a wonderful transition, gradual, with no big drama. You know, we get along great as a family. So having them mentor us has been, you know, really important, I think. Really appreciate that.
Here's the toughest question. What's the best thing about being the host of something as hospitable as the old Rittenhouse Inn?
Well, I think it's the people we meet. I really do. You know, just a few moments ago, I stopped at the front desk, and a couple of people were buying cookbooks, and they wanted me to sign one, and they told me that they got engaged here 15 years ago today, you know, and that happens all the time. I mean, just so many people are here celebrating some kind of special occasion or making a special moment, and, you know, you get to share in that. That's really special, a neat thing.
People might believe it's always business as usual where you work, but I would speculate that it's a smooth-running enterprise because, like any business, you create and you innovate and you delegate and you develop from within. And I'm sure you want to send out some accolades to a really great staff.
Lake Superior Magazine just came out with their Best of the Lake list, and our staff was voted the best hotel and restaurant staff in Wisconsin and around the lake. So that was just such a tribute to them and well-deserved because they just are amazing and they do so much. Wendy and I can't be here 24 hours a day, mm-hmm. but someone has to.
I'm guessing maybe you have seasonal employees. That would make sense. But are there some employees who have been there a while, a long time?
Well, yes. You know, certainly my Aunt Julie been here over 30 years. She did all the drink recipes in the back of the cookbook.
Yeah, I saw those.
We've had, you know, housekeepers that have been here 20, 25 years. One of our best waiters now, Lance, has returned in the recent years, but he was, I think, the very first employee that my parents hired.
Wow.
We had a little time in between there, but that was 40 years.
You know, the mantra that I really like that you read in the book is, it's essential to celebrate life. And I put that bold on my notes here. But then there's a few dots afterwards, and it says, even during the saddest times. And that's what I think got you through the tough stuff. And you've used the word celebrate and celebration a few times in the conversation we've had. The other line I like is, in love with each other and their work. That's very cool. I could do this all day about things that I like about the book. You talked about being stewards of things like the Rittenhouse. You feel as if you're just caretakers and protectors for the future and not necessarily owners of anything. Can you expound on that a little bit? I mean, that really is how you feel.
It is. I mean, I almost feel like these, particularly the Rittenhouse Inn and Chateau buildings, they're almost like siblings to me. They have their own life, and they're senior siblings, you know, they're older than me, and God willing, they'll be here long after I'm gone. Our job is to protect them and maintain them, and the reason that we use them as commercial structures is really, I think, to be able to do that. That was really the original impetus for starting the businesses, was to be able to maintain the structures we love.
Well, in that spirit, I came up with a name for a new recipe.
Ooh, sounds good.
Steward stew. One word. Hodgepodge of ingredients. Steward stew. Well, Mark Phillips, I don't think anybody in Wisconsin has not heard of the old Rittenhouse Inn. It's a real privilege for me to talk to you, and I have to say I haven't been to your establishment, but I sure am going to put it on my list of things to do. Congratulations from everyone, especially, I'm sure, from people who have stayed at the old Rittenhouse Inn. We'll enjoy the cookbook. Keep up the great work in Bayfield, and thanks for another great high season, and we'll try to keep it high.
Thank you so much, Alan. It was a true pleasure and honor to be on your show today.
The book is available where else? At the old Rittenhouse Inn, online at rittenhouseinn.com. Lake Superior Magazine, the publishers, have it. Also on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and the big literary sites. They're showing up at local bookstores around Minnesota and Wisconsin, too. Just over that hill, there's a conversation about Hamlet playing in Amory, Wisconsin. And we'll meet the members of the band Softly Dear. Here's a Spectrum memo. Lots going on at the Phipps in Hudson. The classic big band and the Nostalgics perform Sunday night at 7:30. Dance technique classes begin September 4th. Auditions for the festival chorus are September 4th and 6th. There are theater and magic classes for young people this autumn. And a series of exhibitions under the title Share the Passion can be viewed through September 21st in the galleries. It's all at thephipps.org. Chippewa Valley Youth Symphony invites young musicians to audition Tuesday evening at the Haas Fine Arts Center on the UWEC campus. Details and registration at cvyouthsymphony.org. Well, you know, there should be a song that goes something like, "You say McLaughlin and I say McLaughlin." Because Lemoyne McLaughlin, or McLaughlin's name, gets tossed around more than a salad in a vegan commune. The Irish and the Scots mince the spellings and then hope we pronounce them correctly. I said McLaughlin. Jim Oliver says McLaughlin. And Lemoyne says, it doesn't matter. Let's talk about what's going on in Amory, Wisconsin.
The Tragedy of Hamlet, The Prince of Denmark by William Shakespeare will open Friday and run through Sunday at the Northern Lake Center for the Arts in Amory. Joining us to talk about the show is Lemoyne McLaughlin, who is Executive Director at Northern Lakes and Director of the show. Welcome back to Spectrum West.
It's always good to be here, Jim.
I'm going to beat a dead horse to death here with one of my favorite topics is that many community theater companies seem reluctant to stage Shakespeare's plays. Some will use the reasoning that it would be hard to sell tickets. My view also is that it's hard to find directors willing to take on Shakespeare plays. So what are the challenges?
I'm originally from Eau Claire, an English major graduate from UW-Eau Claire, and we had to take Shakespeare as part of that English major, and I loved it at the time. I mean, I certainly wouldn't recommend anyone being involved in Shakespearean productions if they didn't find it fun and rewarding and a great delight. For the past 7 years, we have closed our summer season with a performance of Shakespeare. The Northern Lakes Center for the Arts consists of several, in a sense, sub-organizations, and one of them is the Northern Lakes Theater Guild, and it's our theater guild that has really been performing those Shakespeare productions. Taming of the Shrew, we've done Romeo and Juliet, we've done Macbeth, we've done The Tempest, and so forth. And this year is, of course, Shakespeare's 450th anniversary of his birth. And we've been alternating comedies and tragedies each year. And this was our year of tragedy. We should bite the bullet and do Hamlet. Hamlet is huge. It's Shakespeare's longest play. It has never, I don't believe, been performed in its entirety in the United States. To be performed in its entirety takes over 4 hours. And American audiences find it very difficult to sit for 4 hours. Also, what kind of directed me in this regard, our listeners may remember a British actor named Alan Cumming, who shows up as one of the introducers for Masterpiece Mystery and a lot of the British television. He was recently in the United States performing a one-man show of Macbeth. He was everybody, from Macbeth to the witches to Lady Macbeth. He performed it all by himself. Wait a minute. If Alan Cumming can get away with that in New York City, we might be able to get away with something similar in Amory, Wisconsin, with Hamlet. And we have a very excellent young actor. When I talk about young, he's not quite 30, and he is our Hamlet. And originally I thought, well, maybe we could even just have him do Hamlet as a one-man show. But then we started putting it together, and we have a cast now. I believe there are 8 members, ranging in age from 12 to 75. And we have put together a performance that pulls the entire production together and I think is going to be very rewarding for our local audience. What we've found is that our local audience in rural Wisconsin likes to attend Shakespeare and will perform to, if not full houses, very close. Mm-hmm. People have a tendency to understand the quality of a Shakespearean performance, and they want to see that.
I was involved in one Shakespearean play years ago, Midsummer Night's Dream, which is a comedy, right. It was really fun to do, and the audiences enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I mean, we went into it with some trepidation, and we didn't sell the place out for every performance, but it was still well received, and I've always felt that as an amateur actor, it was probably the best thing I ever did because it was such a growth experience for me as a performer, and I think that community theaters really owe their actors, number one, and number two, help educate their audiences into the joys and beauty of Shakespearean plays.
Well, what I've also enjoyed about our rehearsing of Hamlet, I am very impressed with the quality of the performance of these people. I'm not going to be in any way apologizing for our performance. It's going to be a most excellent performance that would hold its own just about anywhere.
He is Lemoyne McLaughlin, who is the director of the Northern Lakes Center for the Arts production of Hamlet. Why don't you give us a Cliff Notes version of what the play is about?
Okay, let's try this.
Wikipedia did a fairly brief job of it.
Right. Hamlet's father was murdered by Hamlet's uncle, who was the king's brother. And within 2 months, the brother of the king had married Hamlet's mother. So Hamlet, at the beginning of the play, is very upset by all that's happened, from his father's death that he didn't know was a murder, and his mother's remarrying and so forth. A ghost appears to Hamlet, and it's the ghost of his father who tells him that he was murdered, and it's Hamlet's responsibility to revenge the murder. That's really what the play is all about. In the process, Hamlet had been in love with a young woman named Ophelia. He has to essentially break things off because he's got other responsibilities now. As it turns out, Ophelia's father is kind of accidentally killed by Hamlet. And so Ophelia's brother feels a responsibility to avenge the murder of his father, the same way that Hamlet feels that. And as the play progresses, Ophelia goes mad and drowns. And then in the very last scene, Hamlet and Laertes, the son of Polonius, Ophelia's father, have a duel. In the process, the king, who has kind of gotten together with Laertes, said, look, you can anoint your sword with some really deadly poison, so even if you just scratch Hamlet, he'll die. And if that doesn't work, I've got this potion we can put into a cup. We'll have Hamlet drink it, so he'll die that way. Uh-huh. Hamlet's mother accidentally takes the cup and drinks it, so she dies from the poison. Laertes scratches Hamlet with his poisoned sword, and they get into a fight and exchange swords, and Hamlet grabs Laertes' sword and scratches Laertes, so he's dying that way. After the queen dies, they realize she's been poisoned, and Laertes knows he's dying, so he spills the whole story and says the king's really responsible. So Hamlet goes and makes the king drink what's left in the cup, so the king dies. Everybody dies at the end,
okay, well.
Except Horatio.
Anyway, who are the actors playing the principal characters?
Well, there's a local young man, as I've mentioned, named David Frank, playing Hamlet, and he's absolutely excellent. We've got a new person in our ranks called Malachi Becker, who is playing the part of the ghost at the beginning, and then of Laertes later on in the play. Maggie Christensen is Ophelia. John Cornwall is her father, Polonius. We've got Arthur Long. What is he? I think he's 12 years old. He's the gravedigger. I mean, remember the lines, alas, poor Yorick, I knew him. during the grave scene, Arthur is digging the grave. We're having a lot of fun with that, too.
Well, I can't let you get out of here without talking about your poetry, briefly at least. You have a new book of poetry called A Song of Summer Rain and Other Poems. How many books is this for you now?
That is my fourth book, all of which have really sold well. I read from my books in the libraries of Burnett County, Polk County, St. Croix County, and then I kind of get over this way a little bit in Dunn County and Eau Claire County. But I love to read in the libraries. They're very well received. The River Falls Library this fall is having a 2-month remembrance of Shakespeare and commemoration of Shakespeare's life. And my third book is Secrets from the Wings, which is 50 sonnets about Shakespearean characters. And it's kind of imagining if you could meet these characters in the wings of the production, what would they say? What would it be like? They've asked me to come and read from that book at their festival that they're having this fall in River Falls. So we have a whole lot of fun things that we do.
Didn't you tell me once that you were traveling somewhere in the United Kingdom or something and you stopped at a pub or someplace
yes.
and asked people if you could read yeah. poetry to them?
Glad you remember that story. My wife and I visited Scotland mm-hmm. twice, And, of course, one of the things I wanted to do, you know, Lemoyne, McLachlan, I wanted to visit Castle Lachlan, the home of my ancestors. We did that. And then I also visited the area where Robert Burns was born, farmed, and died. And then on our second visit, we spent a week on the Royal Mile in Edinburgh. And one of the things I did there was to travel up and down the Royal Mile at these tables outside the restaurants and coffee shops and bars and stop and tell people who I was and that I wrote poetry and could I share a poem with you. And so I walked up and down the Royal Mile and read my poetry for people in Scotland. Mm. It was great fun.
Well, we've been visiting with Lemoyne McLachlan, who is executive director of the Northern Lakes Center for the Arts and director of the William Shakespeare play, The Tragedy of Hamlet, The Prince of Denmark. The show runs Friday through Sunday at the Northern Lakes Center in Amory. And for tickets, you can call 715-268-6811. Well, Lemoyne McLachlan, we could talk forever, but I guess we'll have to knock it off for now. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Jim.
Gentlemen, thank you. Softly Dear. That's not a request. It's a band. And we'll talk to and about them next on Spectrum West.
Support for WPR comes from Visit Winona, home of Winona County History Center, with special summer exhibitions including The Art of Fine Furniture 2014. It's the year to discover Winona. Visit Winona.com.
Spectrum Memos here, Tuesday Night Blues at Owen Park in Eau Claire. The final night next Tuesday, the 26th, the Rhythm Posse will be playing. Music starts at 6:30. Thursday night, that's tonight, the 21st, the Sounds Like Summer Concert Series at Phoenix Park, Eau Claire presents, I hope I don't butcher these, EMOT, I mean it's all caps, maybe it's EMOT, maybe it's just EMOT, J.E. Sund or Sundy, sorry, and Greg Gilbertson, got that one right. Thursday night, tonight, the 21st, at Memorial Park in Ladysmith, the Music in the Park series presents George Dums, maybe it's Dooms, I don't know, D-U-M-S. Anyway, he's Mr. Concertina. All right. The band Hell's Bells, billed as America's number one AC/DC tribute band, will play Friday night at Music on the Overlook in St. Croix Falls. And I'm sure they'll hear them in Taylor's Falls, Minnesota as well. It all starts at 6:30. The Overlook is across the street from the Festival Theater. Sunday, it's the Sunset Boat Cruise on the St. Croix. In support of the Festival Theater, dinner, entertainment, silent auction, and more. Info at festivaltheater.org and by phone at 483-3387. This is Spectrum West. We appreciate you being with us today. They're called Softly Dear. If you're within the current music scene in West Wisconsin, you've heard of them. If you're not, you should hear them. By the way, you are hearing a bit of them in the background right now. That's an instrumental track from their new CD. A bit later, we'll hear the song Things I Say. That's been underscored for single airplay attention. They're an interesting and creative combination of young people who met while students at UW Eau Claire. They're on the road right now, setting up and tearing down in locations east of here, like Washington, D.C., that far east of here. Recently, they played at the Sounds Like Summer concert at Phoenix Park in Eau Claire, and I was able to stand in the shade with Tyler, Josh, Alex, and Ben. Addie, the female member of the group, was busy elsewhere at the time, and I learned more about them and how they got their start at the university.
Yeah, I didn't study music. None of us at all really actually studied music, but he did a little jazz.
Were you in high school garage bands?
Yeah, me and Ben. We played some garage bands, yeah. We had a band called Killdozer.
Really crappy.
We had a band.
Killdozer.
Yeah, Killdozer, and then it was called Light Bright.
Well, so then where's the segue to Softly Dear? You know, in my day, we used to sit around, and we'd look around at stuff, and then we'd try to come up with phrases, you know, that were edgy and were kind of in your face. So Softly Dear doesn't fit that scenario.
Well, we tried that originally. We came up with Furniture Wolf.
The name of our
Tyler,
band.
Oh,
yeah. The name of our... It's an accidentally obscure name. My favorite author is Ray Bradbury, and we appreciate all of his short stories. And there's this one story called The Last Night of the World. And the last two words are softly dear, and that came out in 1955 in Esquire magazine. But they did a reprint, and it no longer ends in softly dear. So if you were to purchase the story today, it won't even be there. So
I'm guessing that there are tunes you play that go 180 from softly dear.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Definitely. We play some loud
soft,
ones.
Well, I read that your music, you know, one of the releases I got, your music is reminiscent, it said, of the late 60s rock. And a mixture of that with classic rock, and it wanted to differentiate between late 60s rock and 70s rock, which in my estimation is good, because I thought 70s rock sucked anyway. So are you familiar with the music of that era, or is that just a coincidence?
We definitely all grew up listening to that kind of stuff, as well as modern music, but yeah, I'd say the late 60s especially has been a big influence on our...
Right. Well, I'm going to test you now, though. Who did you listen to? Who did you like from the late 60s?
Obviously, the big ones, the Beatles and Hendrix and Beach Boys.
I want to help the Spectrum West audience define a blend of modern indie folk rock with classic rock. Help me define that, and help me, and it might help our audience to know who on the national scene is that same combination.
Well, we've recently come up with what we say when people ask our genre, because we've gotten that a lot recently.
I have three sheets of paper that have all of the music genres that are available nowadays, so...
Yeah, we tend to just very confidently say rock and roll, because it's... Yeah, we just try to say it confidently, and...
It just seems like genres kind of don't mean too much anymore, so people just have been throwing out, like glow pop, like things that don't even mean really anything. But, we don't try to stick to any genre. It doesn't mean anything to us, I think.
Part of the tendency to just mix genres is just because we just listen to so much different music. Like, we all listen to a wide variety, and I think it's with, like, the internet and everything being so available to everyone, I think it's starting to really blend together, and lines between genres are starting to kind of disappear. So it's exciting, I think.
Well, and I think some groups come up with their own just to mess with people.
Yeah.
Don't you?
I had a buddy.
What?
We have a piano ballad on the upcoming album. It just came out, actually, like 20 minutes ago. Yeah.
I had a buddy who was the CEO of a big company, and just because he got tired of everything, he, on his business card, was labeled as CIEIO. I thought that was kind of cool, yeah. So how does what's happening to you guys today differ from what you did a year ago? You had a Portico EP, I understand. What's different in Softly Dear right now than when you put that out?
Overall, I'd say Portico was a bit more hastily made. Some of these songs that we just recorded, we've actually been playing for our entire lifespan as a band, so we've gotten time to kind of nail things down rather than on Portico. I feel like it was kind of just a lot of writing right beforehand, and these we kind of were able to flesh out a little bit better.
We could probably talk more on that, just because a lot has changed since Portico came out. We were brand new to being a band, like we talked about before. None of us had ever been in bands.
So it's a year together?
We've been together
almost
two years now, but a year of putting out music and like kind of actually playing shows, playing live, and doing that whole thing. And we've just learned a lot through that process. We've had a lot of great friends that helped us kind of just show us the ropes of how to be a band, and just getting our stuff together, such like merch, like we can sell things now and hopefully not lose money on being a band is the plan.
So do you have a logo?
Kind of. Exactly.
We have a couple shirt designs that we've been using.
I don't know of too many bikers that are going to wear a Softly Dear t-shirt.
Maybe once they hear the music they'll like it.
Yeah, maybe.
Talk to me about the Softly Dear process. The writing, the rehearsing, you know, the recording, the performing. Do you have a system? Do you have an assembly line, or do you just let it shoot out?
We definitely don't have a system. Most of the time it's just playing together, having fun. Something comes out of a two-hour-long jam that we like, and then we'll write some words around it, maybe some scratch vocals, and then later write some real lyrics. But it comes out of that, just having fun. And it always comes before the lyrics. Most of the time.
Do you all write?
We write jam.
We all write music. He
We do try to keep the songwriting as collaborative as we can, especially when it comes to arranging the songs, and that's always fun.
Yeah, but you know, bands are notoriously... Yeah. They don't get along in some processes.
Yeah, no, it's not always easy, that's for sure, but it's definitely rewarding when it's...
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's a little harder to nail a song down.
We just released the album today, and it's... While it wasn't always easy to write everything on that, it was... It feels great now, so...
How do you settle your differences? You flip a coin?
Typically, we just talk... We can normally talk most... We're pretty good friends, yeah. I think. That helps. So... Yeah.
Do you write about everything? I mean, there are songwriters who write about things in the past. There are songwriters who write about things coming up. There are people who only write about things today. Where does your subject matter come from?
We write about road trips, things we'd like to do, things we have done. And it's a lot of that. It's not really like love songs or anything, you know? No, there is one. But it's not a love song. Yeah. It's the opposite.
Yeah. What's its name so we can recognize
it? It's called What Was Wrong. Yep, and that's on the upcoming, the album that's out right now.
So after paying your dues, as all good bands must, you're hitting the road. How often, maybe you haven't done this yet, but how often have you had to set your stuff up in a really strange hall that you've never been to? I mean, it's at those places where your music is kind of your business card, because people don't know you from anything. What do you anticipate about this road trip you're taking off on?
We actually played like a lot of house shows, so we've played in already a fair amount of environments. We haven't really toured much outside of the Midwest, so that's going to be pretty new for us. But we've actually, just from hosting house shows and helping out with that, we've gotten somewhat, we've figured it out as far as setting up our gear and different arrangements and stuff. So we still have a lot to learn.
But you know, some East Coast people are kind of, you know, they're looking for you to prove yourself to them.
Yeah, as far as the different crowds go, where that's something we're really looking forward to. We have played some out of town shows. It's always been fun because, you get used to playing to your friends, and it's nice to see just what your music really. And just let the music speak for itself. It's interesting to see. We're excited.
It keeps you honest as far as trying to impress people as well. We try to keep the energy high when we're in situations where we haven't really been there before.
The other three words I read about you is up and coming. Okay, so I think we could probably surmise that you're already up. What's coming for you guys? What do you want to do with your music? What's the dream?
I guess the dream... A little short-term dream would just be to do a tour, and hopefully this is the goal of this tour, not come out of it with less money than you went into it. So that'll be that. If we can do that, I'll be really happy. But eventually, if someday it can become something that's a little bit more sustainable, will allow us to put some more time into doing this, then that'd be a longer-term dream, I guess.
Now, a lot of bands, of course, travel in the big tour buses, and they sometimes, if they're vain enough, they'll put, you know, something up in the front of the bus that will identify. How will people know Softly Dear when you're on the road? Are you going to put a placard up in the windshield? What are you going to do?
We'll probably put bright neon lights flashing just all around the bus.
Yeah, and we're going to brew our own brand of Softly beer, and we're going to give that out for free. Yeah.
And tell the people how you're traveling again. That's interesting.
We're just hopping in a couple of kind of rundown minivans, and we're gonna Toyota Siennas. We endorse that. No, we don't. I'm sorry. but we're gonna hope they hold up. Yeah.
And the tour is how long?
About a month, pretty much a month. Yeah. We started it kind of the past weekend. If you include that, it's a month total. About 3 weeks and a half, though.
And you're going to Chicago, and then you're going to...
Chicago, after that's Bloomington, then we go out Columbus and D.C., and then we just go up the coast pretty much. We might even end up going to Portland, Maine. We're kind of still working one of the dates out. And that would be as far north, and we just swing back around underneath the Great Lakes until we're home.
Well, good luck. Have a good time.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you
very
much.
I've seen time make deserts out of mountains. I've seen time make diamonds out of coal. I've seen time heal bruises of the body, but time can't heal the bruises of the soul. I can't seem to remember what's important. I can't seem to forget the things I should. But I leave my head and I'm better for it. To stand.
Softly Dear. Softly, comma, dear. Nice young guys, good sound. They seem centered in their early perspective, and we'll keep our fingers crossed for how the music business treats them and how they treat it. They're on the road as we speak, and as the career develops, we'll keep our eyes and ears on them. Softly, comma, dear. I'm sure you can get the CD. Just go online, look for it. Local store, too, I'm sure.
Here's what's on stage in Western Wisconsin theater venues. Sweet Surrender is playing through August 30th at the Red Barn Theater in Rice Lake. There is no performance this Sunday. The St. Croix Festival Theater production of The 39 Steps will play tonight, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday. Festival Theater's So Good Improv Troupe will perform Friday in the Elbow Room at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls. Auditions for Jekyll and Hyde the Musical have been scheduled by the Eau Claire Children's Theater for 7 p.m. Sunday and Monday. The Phipps Center for the Arts has scheduled auditions for Seussical at 6:30 p.m. Sunday and Monday at the Phipps in Hudson. The Northern Lakes Theater Guild will present William Shakespeare's Hamlet Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Northern Lakes Center for the Arts in Amory. And that's some of what's happening in live theater around the region. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Yes, you are. Thank you, sir. Thanks, Ashley, and good luck. Tiffany, thank you. Everybody who helps put this show on the air every week. Sure is a lot of fun. Coming up next week, dogs get their day. A film festival gets ready for September. In coming weeks, the Indigo Girls. We'll talk to them. Actress Layla Robbins, a UWEC alum. She's going to be on, Homeland this year. Yeah, that'll be cool. I'm Al Ross. Always fun to present Spectrum West and have you along for the ride. We'll do it again next Thursday, right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Bye.